Welcome to Barely Audible Whisper, a weekly NPR parody podcast in no way associated with NPR, brought to you in no part by the following parody sponsors.
The President Donald J. Trump Prop Employment Center. Hiring black women to be dragged in front of Congress as props that prove you are not a racist because you hire black women.
The Representative Mark Meadows Is Not a Racist Foundation for the not racist use of black women as props, committed to the ongoing ability to use black women as props without being accused of using black women as props.
And the Representative Mark Meadows Is Not a Racist Foundation for having a black nephew. Because what's the point of having a black nephew if you can't use your black nephew as a prop to prove you're not a racist when the black women you used as a prop to prove you're not a racist blows up in your face?
I am Dave.
And I am Molly, and our voices are almost as soft and muted as black women being used as a prop to prove that we're not racist.
President Trump has chosen William Happer to head up a panel to determine whether climate change is a national security threat. Happer is a Princeton professor and climate change denier who once compared the effort to curb CO2 emissions to the Nazis' attempt to eradicate the Jews, saying, quote, "The demonization of carbon dioxide is just like the demonization of the poor Jews under Hitler."
That statement is full of so much metaphorical cow flatulence, it's the leading contributor in carbon emissions.
Barely Audible Whisper obtained hidden microphone audio of the first meeting of Professor Hopper's pseudoscientific climate change denying panel.
I'm filling the room with carbon dioxide so that carbon dioxide will know it is welcome here. Now, stop coughing, you bunch of damn anti-carbon dioxide. Oxidites? Anti-carbon dioxidism is a holocaust of our time!
Oh, those fake scientists are in real danger. I'd better rush in there and open the windows.
How dare you barge into my meeting, open my windows, and forcibly remove the peaceful carbon dioxide from these proceedings! Carbon dioxide has every right to be here!
The carbon dioxide was poisoning everyone in the room.
You wouldn't say that about the Jews!
The Jews? What Jews?
I take the oppression of carbon dioxide personally! I'm half carbon dioxide on my mother's side! My maternal grandmother was a muffler!
What are you talking about?
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to drive Priuses!
Professor Happer is right! I almost died while in a room coincidentally filled with carbon dioxide. While I was passed out from the effects of whatever coincidental, not carbon dioxide related affliction I was suffering from, my whole life flashed before my eyes. Childhood memories. My first kiss. But mainly it was just expensive things paid for by oil lobbyists.
I love expensive things paid for by oil lobbyists.
We all do. But until the miraculous divine intervention that I experienced while being rendered unconscious by not carbon dioxide in a room coincidentally filled with carbon dioxide, I took those expensive things paid for by oil lobbyists for granted. From this day forward, I vow to double my efforts in the fight against climate change and an effort to double my expensive things paid for by oil lobbyists.
Ooh. I can't believe you're going to deny the reality that almost killed you.
I'm not a denier. I'm a skeptic.
No, a skeptic doesn't believe claims unless they can be proven by sufficient evidence. You are refusing to accept the actual evidence that actually proves the actual claim. That's denial.
You wouldn't say that about the Jews!
What Jews?
The Jews that Hitler tried to eradicate, just like Al Gore is trying to eradicate carbon dioxide!
Carbon is the building block of life. We are carbon-based life forms. Therefore, there can never be too much carbon.
Oh, that's like saying because the human body is made up primarily of water, human beings can't drown.
You're right! Human beings can't drown. That's wonderful news!
Well, of course human beings can drown. The point is...
No, we can't! You said it yourself. In the most brilliant application of nonsensical climate skeptic pseudoscience since the discovery that there cannot be global warming if it's cold in January.
No, that's not...
This is an exciting new breakthrough! Now that we know human beings can't drown, we don't have to worry about the drastic increase of catastrophic floods!
Floods, which, by the way, are happening for no particular reason.
That's right!
The increased frequency and severity of floods is directly caused by climate change, which is directly caused by excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
You wouldn't say that about the Jews!
The Jews are not a chemical compound.
Aren't they, though?
Aren't we all just chemical compounds? Is carbon dioxide really that much different than the Jews?
If you prick a carbon dioxide, does it not bleed?
That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
So says the elitist anti-carbon dioxideite scientist!
I'm the janitor. This is an EPA building. If I was a scientist, they wouldn't let me in.
Then you lack the scientific credentials to criticize our critique of scientists with scientific credentials!
You don't have to have a PhD in environmental science to understand that carbon dioxide is produced by man-made activities, and that the inevitable effect of adding excess carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, which controls the climate, is to change the climate.
That's ridiculous! You can't prove that changing the chemical composition of the thing that controls the climate changes the climate!
And where did a so-called janitor learn all of the science you just spouted off, if not from an elitist liberal anti-carbon dioxidatus scientist college?
The fourth grade?
Ha! Everybody knows that fourth grade science classes are a hotbed of liberalism!
And anti-dioxidatist!
You know what? You guys are right. I'm going to close the windows and lock the door behind me.
I hope I did you proud, Mima Muffler!
Michael Cohen accused President Trump of repaying him for hush money he paid to Stormy Daniels while he was president, having knowledge of the WikiLeaks document dumps before they occurred, knowing of and encouraging Don Jr.'s Trump Tower meeting with Russian officials, and a slew of other misdeeds when he testified before the House Oversight Committee on Wednesday.
The testimony began with Mr. Cohen attempting to portray himself as an almost unwittingly brainwashed victim of Trump's immorality, claiming that he acted badly out of blind loyalty to Mr. Trump, in an opening statement that was as lame an attempt at poetry as it was at redemption.
I have done bad things, but I am not a bad man. I have lied, but I am not a liar. I have committed felonies, but I am not a felon. I once watched a woman undress through a pair of binoculars, but I am not a peeping Tom. I have thrown up before, but I, myself, am not vomit. This morning I ate some breakfast, but I am not scrambled eggs with a side of bacon. I have-
It was a really long statement.
I did bad things for Mr. Trump because I found myself enamored with Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump would tell me to do things I knew were wrong, but I did them anyway because I was blindly loyal to his godlike powers. It was like the Manson family, except instead of LSD and murder, it was Adderall and financial crimes. I used to have a shrine dedicated to Mr. Trump in my basement, and every night at midnight, I would sacrifice a poor person on an altar made out of other poor people.
It was a really long statement.
In 12 years of servitude and blind loyalty to Mr. Trump, I committed terrible and unspeakable atrocities. But I'm all better now. Please like me.
That's good enough for me. Dish some more dirt on Trump.
Democrats cozied up to Cohen, holding his hands as they walked him through the allegations against the president, like an owner leading a puppy to a pee pad.
Mr. Trump put Roger Stone on speakerphone, and Roger Stone told him about the WikiLeaks document dump, and Trump told Roger Stone that was great news.
That's a good witness, Mr. Cohen. Good witness. Who's a good witness? Who's a good witness?
I'm a good witness.
Yes. Yes, you are a good witness.
Republicans, on the other hand, rubbed Cohen's nose in his previous criminal behavior, like he pooped his felonies all over their new carpet.
Bad witness! That's a bad witness! Who's going to prison for lying to Congress?
I'm going to prison for lying to Congress. I'm a bad witness.
Whose fault is it that you're going to prison for lying to Congress?
Trump!
That's a good witness!
No, that's a bad witness! Bad witness! I yield my time to Jim Jordan for no apparent reason.
The questioning from Republican members of the committee followed a bizarre pattern of each member spending a few minutes scolding Cohen for his long list of criminal behavior and then yielding their time to Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, who, despite being suspected in a decades-long cover-up of sexual abuse as a wrestling coach at Ohio State, was the Republicans' go-to guy for assassinating someone else's character.
Hillary Clinton! Hillary Clinton! Hillary Clinton!
Representative Jordan's line of questioning consisted of attempting to link Michael Cohen to Hillary Clinton, as well as a slew of other boogeymen of Republican conspiracy theories.
Hillary Clinton, Laney Davis, Hillary Clinton, James Comey, Hillary Clinton, Benghazi, Robert Orr, Hillary Clinton.
And repeating every crime Cohen had ever committed or ever been accused of to destroy his credibility.
You lied to Congress, committed tax evasion, laundered money, perpetuated bank fraud.
Yet, despite the spectacle, Cohen levied serious allegations against the president.
Bilked corporations out of lobbying fees without rendering services, ran a corrupt taxi business, falsified documents.
Mr. Trump repeatedly asked me about the status of the Trump Tower Moscow project throughout the campaign, while he was publicly denying having any deals in Russia.
You ran a red light, failed to yield, changed lanes without signaling.
I have a check signed by Mr. Trump and another check signed by Don Jr. to reimburse me for the hush money I paid to Stormy Daniels. Both checks were written while Mr. Trump was in office and are fraudulently marked as payment for a non-existent retainer. These checks provide concrete, tangible evidence that President Trump committed a felony while he was president.
You have unpaid parking tickets, overdue library books, and once removed a mattress tag.
Mr. Trump had advanced knowledge of and gave his approval for the Don Jr. Trump Tower meeting with Russian officials.
You rebroadcast, redistributed, and gave descriptions of baseball games without the express written consent of Major League Baseball.
I used to be bad because Mr. Trump is bad, and he made me bad. But now I'm good because I drank a potion that released me from Mr. Trump's spell.
Good witness!
Bad witness!
Please like me.
I'd like unanimous consent to enter into the record Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, the smug Starbucks barista who doesn't say Merry Christmas, and Hillary Clinton.
After being warned of major ethical concerns, White House officials reportedly attempted to rush transfers of nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia.
The Atomic Energy Act requires congressional approval for any transfers of nuclear technology, but apparently Trump's officials decided they were just not going to do that.
The ethical concerns include conflicts of interest by Michael Flynn, who spearheaded the attempted transfer before resigning in disgrace as National Security Advisor.
That's right, the same Michael Flynn who sold us out to Russia wanted to give nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia.
The Congressional Committee on Oversight and Reform sent a report to Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney detailing the administration's infractions and issuing demands. We obtained audio of Mulvaney trying to explain this report to the president.
As always, our Trump impersonator is a woman because we hear he hates that.
Mick, Nicholas Mickleby, Mickery Dickery Duck.
Mr. President, my preferred nickname is Mick the Knife.
I'm not calling you that, McNugget.
Fine. What do you need?
Explain this to me.
It's a letter to me from the Committee on Oversight and Reform.
Why is it on my desk? Is that the oversight?
No, Mr. President, I thought you should read it.
I don't understand.
Which part?
The part where you asked me to read something. Read it to me. Read it.
Okay. The committee is investigating.
Start at this part, right here.
That's just my name and address. It's just a formality.
Read it!
The Honorable Mick Mulvaney.
Fake news. I don't hire honorable people. Drain the swamp.
Acting Chief of Staff, the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, NW.
What does that mean? Naked women?
Northwest.
What does my friend Kanye's kid have to do with this? Blacks for Trump!
Can we please get to the important part?
Only because I say so.
The committee is investigating credible information from multiple whistleblowers warning about efforts inside the White House to rush the transfer of highly sensitive U.S. nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia.
Fake news! If I wanted to rush something, I'd declare a state of emergency, even though I don't have to do that.
The whistleblowers have warned of conflicts of interest that could implicate federal criminal statutes.
If I have a conflict of interest with Saudi Arabia, why did I go so easy on their ruler over the killing of Jamal Khashoggi?
Please don't tweet that. Let's see, it mentions a working environment inside the White House marked by chaos,
dysfunction and backbiting.
Who said that? I'll bite them right in the back.
This is pretty bad, Mr. President. It mentions how ethics advisors have been ignored when they ordered your officials to halt their efforts.
I'm the president. I give the orders.
It brings up Michael Flynn and his former company, IP3, setting up a meeting with you to discuss, quote, agreements to share U.S. nuclear technology with Middle East nations, including Saudi Arabia. It says you are supportive of this. Then it lists a bunch of requested documents.
What about where it mentions Obama? This is all his fault, you know.
This letter never mentions Obama.
Fake news, right there. Attempts by ACU, Thomas, Barack, Colony.
That's Thomas Barrack.
Fake name, it's Obama.
Thomas Barrack is a close friend and advisor of yours. You've known him 30 years.
Oh, right. I call him Tommy Billions because he's a billionaire, like moi.
Well, he's a former billionaire. He lost a lot of money on bad deals and chasing celebrity status.
Don't correct me. I hate that.
So yeah, he's a billionaire just like you.
Well, Mick in a Box, you're my chief of staff. What do we do?
Acting chief of staff.
You're just acting?
I want to be clear that I'm in this job temporarily. I think you need to distance yourself from Barrack.
It's pronounced Barack, and I couldn't possibly distance myself anymore.
Distance yourself from Tommy Billions. It doesn't look good that he's one of the only people who came to MBS's defense after the Jamal Khashoggi killing.
Fake news. Many people didn't condemn the Jamal Khashoggi killing. Me, Tommy Billions, my son-in-law Jared, Michael Flynn.
You just listed everyone who's been named in this nuclear thing.
Witch hunt.
This isn't a witch hunt. It's just
no collusion.
Are you just shouting things to change the subject?
Saturday Night Live is the enemy of the people.
I can see why John Kelly left. This is pure chaos and dysfunction.
I'll bite you in the back.
After Michael Cohen accused President Trump of being racist during his congressional testimony on Wednesday, Republican Representative Mark Meadows defended President Trump against the charge of racism by parading a black woman who works for Trump in front of the committee to demonstrate that President Trump has a black employee.
Which, for the record, is the most racist way a racist white person can defend themselves against allegations of racism.
Michael Cohen claims that President Trump is a racist, but I submit to you that he hired a black woman. A black woman who I will invite not to speak, but who I will force to stand in silence in her blackness, allowing her blackness to speak to the fact that she is black.
Later in the hearing, Representative Rashida Tlaib called Representative Meadows out for his use of a black woman as a prop.
That was some racist-ass bullshit right there.
Being called out by a black woman for the use of a black woman as a prop did not sit well with Representative Meadows, but luckily for Mr. Meadows, Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings did his best to pry Meadows' foot out of his mouth.
Mr. Chairman, I demand that Ms. Tlaib's comments be stricken from the record. I did not go through the trouble of inviting a black woman to not speak to prove that I was not racist, just to be called racist by a speaking black woman.
Please stop talking, Mr. Meadows.
You know me, Chairman Cummings. I have nieces and nephews that are people of color.
Seriously, dude, shut up. I'm trying to pull you out of the hole you're digging.
I don't dig holes, Chairman Cummins. I hire black people to dig holes for me.
I'm asking you as a friend to stop talking.
You just called me a friend and you're black. What more does anyone want from me? I have a black friend, I have black relatives, I even own a Sammy Davis Jr. record.
Mr. Meadows, I am chairman of this committee.
A black committee chairman. What a country!
I am also an authority on race relations due to my distinguished record on civil rights issues and the fact that I look like a less ugly John Lewis.
Now the problem with John Lewis is that...
For the love of God, shut your dumb cracker ass up and let me rescue your dumb cracker ass from your own cracker ass dumbness. Now I'm going to allow Representative Tlaib to restate her opinion that the use of a black woman as a prop was an isolated act of racial insensitivity that she is entitled to perceive as racist without characterizing you as an individual as racist. Agree.
Fine.
Good. Moving on.
Oh, my nieces and nephews are going to think it's so cool that their uncle's friends with a less ugly John Lewis.
Earlier this month, a suicide car bombing killed 40 Indian troops in Kashmir.
Our own Warren Bickering filed this report.
The Himalayan territory known as Kashmir has been the source of conflict between India and Pakistan for some time. A Pakistan-based terror group, Jaish-e-Mohammed, claimed credit for the bombing. An Indian official responded to the attack by saying, "Each time you attack us, be certain we will get back at you, harder and stronger."
Earlier this week, there were reports of an airstrike in Pakistan.
Our own Daily Spats and Bickering, who happens to be Warren Bickering's husband, filed this report.
Reports are a little confusing and inconsistent here. Pakistani leaders, who deny that Jaish-e-Mohammed even operates in Pakistan, claim that Indian jets invaded Pakistani airspace, but claim there was no strike.
We now bring both Warren Bickering and Daily Spats and Bickering to discuss the situation in Kashmir.
India claims they have successfully bombed a training camp in Pakistan, which was connected to Jaish-e-Mohammed.
How is that possible when Jaish-e-Mohammed is banned in Pakistan?
It's an open secret that Pakistan continues to harbor terror groups, even though they claim they've gotten rid of them. It's like you with your secret brandy stash.
Oh! Oh! We're going there? How about the fact that India's citizens were just waiting for an excuse to get nasty with all the Muslims living in Kashmir? They've been harassing them, evicting them. It's a shameful overreaction. Like you when I deleted Rent Live off the DVR.
I was going to watch it last night.
You were never gonna watch it.
Can we please just do our jobs?
You're the one who went personal first.
Fine. Sorry.
I'm sorry too.
India claims that their strikes were effective and that there were no civilian casualties. Furthermore, this strike was necessary to prevent the credible threat of another suicide bombing.
Pakistan, on the other hand, says that India is looking for opportunities to commit acts of aggression on any given day.
Pakistan is kidding themselves if they think they can harbor people who attack Indian military and not face retribution.
Still, for the invasion of Pakistan's airspace, Pakistan was justified in shooting down two of India's planes.
India is reporting one missing pilot. I don't know where you get your information from. And how is that justified when India's attack was on a terror group?
They bombed Pakistani territory.
Pakistan was harboring terrorists.
You can't prove that.
Anyway, I thought there was no bombing. Keep your story straight. This is Kashmir all over again.
Okay, everyone, just to be clear, he's not referring to the region Kashmir, but to a Kashmir sweater I allegedly ruined 10 years ago.
It's an apt analogy. First you didn't have my sweater, then it turns up in your laundry, shrunk and bleached. But you say I must have put it there.
You must have. I have a system.
Like you're the only one with a system.
You're always looking for reasons to bring up ancient history. Just like India.
Just like Pakistan, you mean.
Okay, I think we're gonna have to cut this off.
What? But it was just getting good.
Don't get me wrong, I could listen to Warren and Daly bickering all day. But we learned last week with the Jesse Smollett thing not to write sketches about still developing situations.
Good point.
Damn you, Jesse!
This year's Oscar were a celebration of diversity in film.
And just in case the complete lack of subtlety was too subtle for some people, the theme of diversity was repeated in every acceptance speech.
I share this award with all the women, and immigrants, and people of color, and immigrants and women, and the LGBT community, and people of color, but mainly women and immigrants.
Yet, despite the over-the-top outward devotion to diversity,
I share this award with all of the women, and immigrants, and people of color, and immigrants and women, and the LGBT community, and people of color, but mainly women and immigrants.
The Academy has been roundly criticized for bestowing the honor of Best Picture on Green Book, a film critics contend is an egregious example of the white savior narrative.
Condescending white savior stories, in which one noble white person rescues a helpless person of color and becomes the hero in someone else's story, have been a popular way of whitewashing America's racist past in a way that makes white people feel comfortable and seem more noble.
I share this award with all of the women and immigrants and people of color and immigrants and women and the LGBT community and people of color, but mainly women and immigrants.
In order to combat the white savior myth, Barely Audible Whisper presents the story of one white savior being saved from the perils of being a white savior by a different white savior.
By being moderately less racist than my cartoonishly racist peers, I fixed racism!
That poor, presently out of touch and historically uninformed white person.
You're welcome, world.
She thinks the world owes her something for being a little less awful than that awfulness that preceded her.
All I ask in return is perpetual praise for my heroic achievement and constant credit for possessing a bare minimum of human compassion.
It's not her fault. White saviors are the victims of society's evolving understanding of racial complexities and the myth of a post-racial society.
Also that I never have to confront racial issues ever again, because by distinguishing myself from the most egregious examples of racism, I have alleviated myself from any responsibility for racism.
But who will save the white savior? Who will have the faux courage to distinguish themselves as slightly less racist than contemporary standards?
I'm a hero. I have a black friend.
I'll be that hero, even if it means suffering the scorn and ridicule of some of my black friends, because I'm so not racist that I have many black friends.
I have a dream that, you know, something, something, not be judged by skin color, but something, something, content of character, blah, blah, blah. That's the one and only Dr. King quote that I know. I may not get it exactly right, but I get the gist of it. And the gist of that quote is the gist of Dr. King. And the gist of Dr. King is the gist of why there's no racism as long as we only talk about race as the gist of Dr. King.
I'm uniquely qualified to be the hero who saves the white savior. I know all three Dr. King quotes.
I don't see color.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that. It makes you sound ridiculous.
But it's the gist of Dr. King.
Reducing the gist of Dr. King to one misapplied quote is an insult to the legacy of the gist of Dr. King. The true gist of the true legacy of Dr. King is about oversimplifying the moral arc of history bending towards justice. And that thing about the mountaintop.
But I did something not racist. By being less racist than racist people, I helped a victim of racism, who I cared about because I was so not racist, become a victim of less racism because there was less racism to be the victim of because I wasn't racist.
That's very nice, but...
It's more than nice, it's heroic. I suffered tremendous slight ridicule for my courageous stance against the racists who I ridiculed for their racism, but was still hurt when they ridiculed me for ridiculing them.
By experiencing a slight hint of the pain that oppressed people feel on a daily basis...
You'll never know the suffering I've suffered by the slight inconvenience of being disliked by people I don't even like.
Don't you dare lecture me on slight inconvenience. For the past 9 years, I've wanted nothing more than to honor my favorite president by being Barack Hussein Obama for Halloween. But for 9 consecutive slightly inconvenient Halloweens, I've had to dress up as something else. Because despite my not racist intentions, the perception of blackface as racist prevented me from being able to wear a costume that honored the historic achievement of the first black president.
9 years? Obama's first year in office was 10 years ago.
The first year I went in blackface, I got disinvited to my black friend's annual Halloween party after I showed up to his house in blackface. That's how I found out that blackface is always perceived as racist, even if you didn't intend it to be racist.
But if you didn't intend for it to be racist, it shouldn't be perceived as racist. That doesn't seem fair.
Of course it's not fair, but racism isn't fair. It isn't fair that I can't do something associated with racism, even if I don't mean it in a racist way. Just like it isn't fair that people of color get prison sentences 3 times as long as white people who commit the same crimes.
Those things seem equally unjust.
That's what I thought at first. But then it occurred to me that injustice of a minority getting 10 years in prison for possession of the same amount of marijuana that a white guy would get community service for might actually be more unjust than me having to settle for dressing up like Joe Biden on Halloween.
That's remarkably not racist of you. You deserve a lot of praise and credit for that.
That's what I thought at first. But then it occurred to me that that's just basic human decency.
But basic human decency goes against the grain of human history. We deserve to be lavished in praise and credit for it.
That's what I thought at first. But then it occurred to me that being slightly less awful than the contemporary standard of racism is what makes white saviors white saviors. And the contemporary standard of racist is to be a white person who brags about exhibiting basic human decency as if it's something that deserves to be lavished in praise and credit.
So in order to remain white saviors, we have to act like we're not white saviors because the modern white savior rejects the idea of white saviors.
Exactly! Fake humility is the new fake heroism. I share this award with all the women and immigrants and people of color and immigrants and women and the LGBT community and people of color, but mainly women and immigrants.
President Trump had a private meeting with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un during their summit in Vietnam. Barely audible whisper captured audio of the meeting with a hidden microphone.
As always, our Trump impersonator is still a woman because we hear he still hates that.
Oh, Kim, I love to hold you close and feel your square head pressed against my rolls of fat.
And I love the way my misshapen bowl cut forms a jet black Hitler mustache above your belly button.
Remember when we fell in love in Singapore?
How could I forget? You spontaneously declared at a press conference that you were ending joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises without consulting South Korea or your own generals.
And I got absolutely nothing from you in return.
What about all the love letters I wrote you? That's something.
I memorized my favorite one. Trump walks in beauty like the night, of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright, meet in Trump's aspect and Trump's very large hands. Did you write that one yourself, Kim?
You're dumb enough to believe I did.
You write the best love letters. Nobody writes most better love letters than Chairman Kim. Chairman Kim love letters are the Trump tweets of love letters. I talk about your letters all the time. I say, Chairman Kim and I fell in love, and Chairman Kim writes me beautiful letters.
I know. I make them play those clips on state television all the time. It's a real propaganda victory for me. I mean, great compliment.
I wish I had state-controlled media. All I have is Fox News, which is nice, but I can't have Shepard Smith killed.
I hate that for you. Sometimes when I'm having my enemies murdered, I think about how unfair it is that you can't have your enemies murdered. And even though it makes me sad that you can't have your enemies murdered, it makes me happy because it gives me a reason to think about you.
You think about me when you have your enemies murdered? That is so sweet.
Sometimes I have my enemies murdered just to have an excuse to think about you.
I felt the same way about you when I helped cover up the murder of Jamal Hamhoge.
You bastard!
Ow, you hit my belly with your bare hand.
Hang on, let me climb up on this stepladder so I can slap you in the face. You bastard! How dare you cheat on me with another dictator?
It's not like that. MBS means nothing to me.
It's because he's taller than me, isn't it?
Of course not. Nobody's taller than you, Kim. Me and you both have notes from corrupt doctors saying we are 6'7" and weigh 250 pounds of pure muscle.
It's because I had to travel on a train because I couldn't afford to fly, isn't it? I know you, Donald. You hate poor people.
That's true. I do hate poor people. Poor people are stupid. It's like, duh, why don't you just get daddy to give you $413 million? How hard is that?
What I lack in MBS's money, I make up for with my nuclear weapons program.
Actually, we're selling MBS top secret nuclear weapons technology.
You bastard!
It's just business, I swear.
Do you mean it?
Of course I do. You're the dictator I love. My relationship with MBS is all about heavy money laundering and light treason, just like my relationship with Putin.
You bastard! Is there a ruthless dictator on Earth you're not having a relationship with?
Maduro?
You don't love me. You love the idea of me. You've got a fetish for ruthlessly oppressive dictators. I'm just your ruthlessly oppressive flavor of the month.
Don't you see? Putin and MBS were just a means to an end. I needed them to obtain power. I needed them to get to you. You're my little rocket man.
And you're my Yankee imperialist dotard.
I'll make it up to you, my little rocket man. I'll give you anything you want. Sanctions relief, legitimacy on the world stage, the indentured servitude of Dennis Rodman.
I'm sorry I got so jealous. You're the first person I've ever loved who I couldn't have murdered on a whim. I guess I'm just not used to being vulnerable.
I understand. You're the first person I've ever loved who wasn't me.
I hope life treats you kind. And I hope you've had all you've dreamed of.
And I wish you joy and happiness. But above all, I wish you love.
And I will always love you. We'll always love you. We'll always love you. We'll always love
you. Thank you for listening to Barely Audible Whisper.
Hot fat of liberalism!
Made possible by the following people: writer, co-host, and producer Dave Baldwin, co-host Molly Brown, writer and actor Daniel Carter Brown, actor Michael Morgan, and actress Corey Burns. Please subscribe to us and follow us on your social media and share us with all of your friends. We appreciate your support.
As an almost unwittingly brainwashed victim of Trump's immortality.
Immorality. Motherfucker better die at some point.
No shit, right?
Hubris!